Barack Obama's most influential advisors on climate politics and policy, including Carol Browner, the former Environmental Protection Agency administrator, and John Podesta, the president's transition chief, gave virtually no consideration to a carbon tax that autumn and early winter. A Democratic Party-led coalition building around greenhouse gas controls focused on the development of a big cap-and-trade bill that would be introduced in Congress early in the Obama presidency. The corporate center of this lobbying push was the United States Climate Action Partnership, an advocacy group in Washington that had attracted Shell, Dow Chemical, Ford Motor Company, and major coal-dependent utility companies, as well as powerful environmental groups such as the Natural Resources Defense Council. The negotiations within the Climate Action Partnership about what sort of cap-and-trade bill might be acceptable to the group's diverse corporate and environmental members had become a kind of private dress rehearsal for the lobbying scrum expected on Capitol Hill once Obama and the new Democratic congressional leadership settled in. As pre-packaged coalition politics and congressional lobbying, the Climate Action Partnership was a very developed piece of work, Browner recalled. It was, however, a fragile coalition. The oil company lobbyists involved felt that their industry's interests were often neglected in comparison with coal utilities from political swing states such as Virginia, West Virginia, and Ohio. The Climate Action Partnership was a rare example, nonetheless, of a powerful business environmentalist alliance focused on a major environmental policy reform that would impose costs on business, an association that had slowly taken form after a very long lobbying struggle over climate policy in Washington, dating back to the second Clinton term. The coalition had gathered momentum after 2006, amid economic growth and low unemployment. Those conditions no longer prevailed. In September 2008, the Wall Street bank Lehman Brothers collapsed, triggering a banking panic that froze up credit lines and paralyzed the global economy. The United States plummeted week by week into its deepest recession since the 1930s. Collapsing production and rising joblessness challenged every assumption about policy and politics that Obama had relied upon to win office, including climate policy. On December 16th, in Chicago, Obama met with Browner and his top economists. The depths of the economic crisis made clear to them that they would now have to push for a large stimulus bill to use rapid federal government spending to prevent a full-blown depression. Obama and his advisors decided that day to design the stimulus to make a down payment on their major domestic priorities, particularly clean energy. Franklin Roosevelt's stimulus during the Depression years had built national park facilities. Obama's bill, they concluded, should launch a new era of investment in solar energy, wind power, other clean energy technology, smart meters to regulate home electricity use more efficiently, upgrades to the national electric grid transmission system, home weatherization, and energy efficiency programs. These expenditures ultimately would total $80 billion. The renewable energy advocates around Obama recognized, however, that the long-term economic viability of solar and wind power would depend on whether dirtier, cheaper sources of energy such as oil and coal would be taxed, directly or through cap-and-trade. If carbon-heavy fuels like gasoline and coal did not become more expensive, the rate of adoption of solar and wind would slow, and the dangers of climate change would remain unacceptably large, they believed. The greatest obstacle facing Obama on climate regulation as he prepared for inauguration then was hardly ExxonMobil. With Chevron and Shell in the cap-and-trade lobbying coalition, the oil industry had been split and weakened as a lobbying force on climate policy. The challenge was whether the cap-and-trade lobbying coalition would hold together at all under the mounting pressure of the 2008-2009 recession. Fundamentally, if you're going to have an economy-wide cap-and-trade system, you need to trust government and Wall Street, said one of the president's outside energy advisors. That trust was collapsing even faster than the Obama team understood. ExxonMobil stood apart. The corporation, said a second Obama advisor involved, seemed to me to follow a track that was quite different from the other oil majors, being firmly fixed in the fuck you, no apologies, oil is here to stay mode. The corporation saw itself as merely carrying out its own global environmental and economic policy advocacy as it thought best. It dispatched public affairs officers to explain its position to foreign governments with which it partnered to produce oil, lest those governments be confused about ExxonMobil's thinking. Its briefings early in 2009 emphasized that cap-and-trade is complex, unpredictable, cumbersome, and expensive, making it difficult for firms to plan long-term investments. In comparison, ExxonMobil believes the predictability of a progressive carbon tax would encourage new investment in carbon reduction technologies.